This is a Pinball News production.
Hello, hello. Good morning to everyone. Now, I'm Raymond Gay, and I'm full on deaf. And you might be wondering how I turned deaf. Well, when I was 15 months old, I lost my hearing in my ears by a severe high fever and bronchial pneumonia. As you can obviously see, I'm signing with my hands, and I'm using American Sign Language. That's my primary language. And I have two interpreters here with me that will be interpreting my speech. Now, you may have seen these different printed circuit boards in the back of some old pinball machines, and you may be thinking, like, who made them? I actually designed these boards in the beginning of the first solid-state pinball machine in 1977 all the way to 1982. I worked as the printed circuit board designer for Seberg, Williams, Bally, and then eventually Midway. I worked for them for 32 years. And then additionally, I worked 2 years as a technical illustrator and 2 years as a mechanical draftsman, both at Seberg. So altogether, I've worked in the pinball industry for about 36 years, ranging from 1965 all the way to 2001. And then in 2002, I retired. And I've enjoyed my life as a retired man. Now, for many years, I have read and understood a variety of electrical symbols and wire names on the schematics that were drawn by a bunch of different electronical engineers who would give me work to do. So you may be wondering where I learned to do all this. In 1969, I learned the basics of PCB artworks at Seberg, and I started picking up things and picked up more knowledge as I worked there. I became qualified to be a PCB designer at Williams and Midway. Eventually, of course, I did have to go to school to learn the CAD program. Fortunately, I had a sign language interpreter there that was helping me learn. And after I learned that, I started using the computer for PC board work in 1983. Now, before I was using the computer, I used to have to design using black solid tape along with blue and red transparent tape on Mylar sheet to make my PCB artwork. I had to do it by hand before, you know, I started using the computer, so it was tough. Now, I designed many PCB boards as a senior video game designer at Midway. I worked for Williams as well for 14 years. I've designed many PC boards such as the CPU, driver, sound, the power supply, master, the four slave displays, the sound and talking, the widgets, all that stuff. Just a wide variety of stuff that I worked on for pinball machines for almost 4.5 years. So maybe you might be wondering how I would communicate with my coworkers that were hearing. Well, usually how it would work was the first time I would meet a hearing person, there was always difficult to start with. You know, we'd always have problems communicating. But then later, as we got more acclimated to each other, you know, we communicated better. Of course, there was always misunderstandings, but the easiest way we would communicate would be writing back and forth to each other. As we went along, our communications got better, and we rarely had any problems.
In the fall of 1965, I got my first job at the Seberg Corporation, and it was in Chicago. Seberg produces the hot and cold drink, candy, cigarette vendors, and jukeboxes. I created many PCB artworks for the jukebox and test point fixture for almost 6 years. On the beginning of spring in 1976, William's project was to start building its first solid-state pinball machine. And it was Seberg did it for Williams for the first time. After several months, we finished it, but it wasn't 100% ready to go. And when I was looking at the machine, I was looking at the cables and the PCBs inside the pinball. I was looking around, and I knew it just did not look very good, but I didn't say anything because it wasn't my project, and so I let them work on it. And the next day, two engineers were really excited to see the president and the chairman, the chief engineers, and other different executives to visit the pinball. They were hoping that all those people would approve the project. Unfortunately, though, most of the executives rejected it. And the engineers tried to persuade them, and they began having a really heated argument. But the executives decided that they would close the project. They walked out, and then eventually I decided to go back to the place where I worked before. A few months later, the Seberg electrical engineer introduced a man from Williams to me at the drafting department in Seberg. I remember his name was Mike Stroll. He was a very nice man. He was responsible for the advances in development team, and they were to build the new first solid-state pinball game for Williams. He was very friendly. He was silly and fun, and he had a good sense of humor. And he was really good at lip reading, and I became more interested in working with him. Mike and his small group moved from Williams to Seberg, a room for developing the solid pinball, and they started to work on it. I didn't work on that because I was in the drafting department, and I was still a Seberg employee. The following week, Mike gave me his new schematic of the pinball driver board, and I started to lay out the PC board. After I finished the PCB artwork and returned it to him, he was really happy with the work. And that was the first time that I ever did any work for him. The next day, Mike brought other new schematics to me to make a new CPU and PCB artwork. When I finished it, I brought it to Mike's place. As I entered, I browsed all the things in his office and looked at each of Mike's employees. They're all so young and so busy in this process of the first solid-state pinball. And Mike introduced me to five different people. One of them was Ken Fedenza, who was with me at Williams for many years. I had seen him so often, and he was always good to me. And I always liked him a lot.
Now, Ken's team was very quiet looking on, and they were kind of watching me. But, you know, nevertheless, they tried to understand and communicate with me because they knew that I was deaf. These guys were very patient with me, and I very much appreciated that. And sometimes they acted really funny by using different gestures and communicating with me, and we became friends. A month later, Mike asked my boss if I could start working at his place. And my boss said, yeah, okay. I was extremely happy and very thankful to my boss for letting me go. In the pinball development, I stayed with Mike's team every day through many months. I felt like there was a lot of energy in the room, and we were all very motivated at the time, and we all enjoyed working with each other. Everyone was doing business as usual, you know, and we were progressing very, very well. Now, in the late fall of 1976, the first PC boards with the inserts components arrived. Now, the driver board was mounted inside the wall of the interior back box, and that was connected to the CPU board and to the driver board on top. And then the power supply was mounted next to the CPU and the driver sides. We all looked on it, and we all thought that it looked a lot better than the Seberg's first model. In 1977, the machine was completed. And Mike came to look around, and he looked at the cables and the boards inside, and inside the upper and lower pinball cabinets, and he looked at it and he said, "Oh, it looks good." He was very satisfied with it and he approved it. So Mike and I started playing with it and testing it, and it looked like everything functioned properly. And after we were done with the test, we found absolutely no problems. Everything was perfect at last, and we were all extremely delighted. The next day, Mike brought a bottle of the finest champagne to our team for the celebration of our successful first solid-state pinball that was going to be released. Mike opened the cork to pop the champagne, and it must have flew like 30 feet. And he poured into everyone's cup, and he gave a speech, and he all thanked us. And we toasted each other. We had a toast, and it was the first, William's first solid-state pinball machine. Now, 1978, Williams produced, that first year they produced 4,000 solid-state Lucky 7 pinball games and 6,000 solid-state Hot Tip pinball games. In the fall of 1977, I started thinking almost every day how bad I wanted to be a Williams employee. So at last, I asked Mike if I could work with him, and he said he would gladly have me on his team, but he wanted to talk to my boss first. I went to my boss's office and I asked him if I could transfer to Williams. And to my surprise, he said, "Sure, you can transfer."
He knew that Williams was really a good fit for me. And both Mike and my boss decided to sign the transfer slip. I felt so great to become a Williams employee. And I was so grateful to him. During winter, everybody and I moved back to Williams. And in 1979... Williams broke away from Seaburg. I felt really lucky that I was able to transfer. As for Steve Kodirk, he actually didn't know that I was deaf. And I didn't know that he was the head of the pinball game design department and the playfield designer. On my first day that I worked at Williams, Steve came down to look around the first solid-state pinball machine. I went to the side of the pinball machine, and Steve stood on the other side. And while I was checking something on the back of the box, I didn't hear him talking to me. And I noticed him talking in front of me, and I had to tell him as I waved my hands to him. And he was kind of confused. So I had to kind of act and showed him. I put my index fingers and pointed to both my ears to let him know that I was deaf, and he understood after that. We happened to look at each other for a short time with no words, so I decided to get a pad of paper and pencil, and so we wrote back and forth. And we wrote down our names to greet each other, and that's how we began to know each other, and it worked out. He was really just so sweet to me. He was such a good guy. And today I'm quite happy to see Steve Kodirk here. I'm just so glad that he's here and living a long time. It's great. In 1979, the world's first talking pinball is named Gorgar. In the beginning of the pinball project, I completed an original sound talking PCB artwork. And then that was sent out to the PCB company to order a few copper-clad PC boards produced. After the PC boards with inserted components arrived to the company, one of them was mounted inside the back box next to the CPU board. And then I turned the pinball machine power on, and Ken and I played it. Ken stood in the front of the pinball and listened to the speakers, but I couldn't hear it. And I happened to notice the expression on Ken's face. He didn't seem pleased with it. So I asked him what was wrong. He said that it was okay, but there's kind of a strange noise that bothered him. So we checked the schematic, and we saw that everything was okay. He thought that maybe he needed all the components on the analog area to move close enough, and it needed to be more tight. So I had to redo the PC layout. After the PCB artwork was done, it was sent out again to order a few new PC boards to be produced.
So a week later, the talking sound PC boards arrived. So we replaced the original talking soundboard PC boards with the new one, and we started playing some pinball. So while Ken was playing the pinball to test and listen to the talking, Ken gave me the thumbs up and said, "It was perfect." What a wonderful experience. In 1978, the Playfield design, while I was in the Playfield design department, I walked by Steve Ritchie's cubicle. He was designing the first Flash Playfield, as I recall. I happened to notice him working on it, and I heard that he was the new guy from California. So I thought, maybe I should stop by his cubicle and introduce myself. It was very difficult to understand his lip reading, so I had to tell him to slow down numerous times. And he got confused. He didn't realize that I was deaf, and I had to point that out to him. And then once he got it, we started communicating much better via writing paper back and forth. He had to try to improve his lip reading skills. So he showed me, he probably showed me his first design Flash Playfield. And he made a lot of creative things that made us excited with his innovations. And over the years, I saw many different things that he designed. And that's how we got to know each other for many years. And as it stands, we are still very good friends even today. It's sad that his hearing is starting to deteriorate. And now he's nearly deaf, like me. And so now I can relate with him a little bit more now. He currently lives in California, and I think he loves it out there. Now, Mark Laredo is my longtime best friend, and we still are friends today. And I'm so happy that he's here. In 1985, a manager, Dave, I forget his last name, but he introduced me to Mark as the new electronical engineer for the pinball and upright video games. At the time, Mark was so young. And Dave was telling him that I was deaf, and Mark got it right away. And over the time we worked together, his ability to communicate with me improved a lot. And then to my surprise, he started learning sign language. He picked it up really fast. And for many years, we would often communicate by using sign language while we were working together. Now that's Mark's one cool guy, and I've always been very fond of him. He always had a great sense of humor, and just everyone seemed to like him. Now, about Larry DeMar, a few years later, Mark Lafredo introduced me to Larry and his personal office. He worked as a pinball game programmer. Mark told him how I was deaf and how we communicate and what I did as a job. And Larry got it. He lip read very well. Oftentimes, though, we would write papers back and forth, and he was extremely friendly with me. Sometimes I would stop by his place, and he would show me what new game he was programming, and every year he'd let me play his prototype pinball. He always wanted to know what I thought about it, and I really appreciate that. And he's still one of my good friends to this day. I also have other good friends that I made, Roger Sharp, around early 1985, we met at the game room in at Williams.
Sometimes during our break time, he and I would go have fun and play on the pinball machines, and that's how we became really good friends. Well, I have to stop my speech because we're out of time. I wish I could tell you more of what I experienced with Williams and Midway and all my friends. I would often meet some very wonderful people, pinball playfield designers. Honestly, I never thought that I would be giving a speech today, but I did. So now I'm going to ask that Eric Kamen would come up here and give a little speech as well. And he'll talk to you briefly.
All right, hello everyone. I am Eric Kamen, and I currently live in Colorado, but I was born in New York. I've been repairing pinball machines since 1975. I moved to Los Angeles in 1980, and I worked for a company called C.A. Robertson. Some of you might be familiar with that company. One day, my manager came up to me as I was working, and he told me that the board that I was repairing was actually made by a deaf man. I was completely amazed and shocked. I was completely unaware that an actual deaf man had been making these boards that I've been repairing for all these years. So I asked my manager where this supposed deaf man was located, and he said he worked in Chicago at the Midway Bally Williams factory. So finally, I got out to Chicago to see the factory in 2000, and I went to the secretary to see if this man Ray Gay was there, and she called him up, and I finally got to meet Ray after all these years of hearing about him. He took me back to where he worked and showed me all the things that he'd been working on, and I was completely blown away. At one point, I saw this hat. I saw on this computer screen that he had this hat. And I saw it, and I said, what's up with the hat? And he said, oh, you can have it. And I still have it to this day. And I said, so you're able to do all this wonderful work, and you're deaf, and I'm so amazed. You do all this work, and do you have any problems? And he said, yeah, I do it. And so the reason I'm here in front of y'all is because I want everyone to know that Ray did this amazing work on the solid state board, starting with the hot tip machine in 1977, and that he's deaf, and it didn't stop him, and it didn't matter. And then we're all very proud of him, not only me, but everyone. Thank you. He was the one that actually encouraged me to come up here and speak, and I realized that I owe it a lot to him for being here. You know, we're just very, very proud of him. Not too many people knew that Ray was deaf and that he did all this wonderful work, and we're all very proud of him. Okay, so I'm going to ask Steve if he would like to speak a little bit.
Yeah, you've done very, very well. Nothing much more I can add except that it was great to have you in the department. It's very, very good to be able to have somebody at the end that know the business as well as we did. And it was constantly something we could give you, and we knew it always turned out correct. That was very, very, very important.
Thank you so much. I love you very much. I'm wondering if Larry would like to add anything.
I could probably talk for a while about Ray. One of the best things that I can say is that Ray's disability was not even evident through working with Ray. He's just a very hard worker. He did a great job. He did anything we wanted. He was easy to work with. We really had very little trouble communicating. To hear Ray tell about laying out with tape, and then, you know, I got done with that dumb work and went to this cool PC CAD stuff. I remember the process of laying out PC boards with tape. It is a very difficult, you know, grueling, laborious process, but it's also an art form. I mean, to actually he's translating a schematic, which is just showing how things are connected, and then taking all these devices, which are in funny shapes, and you have to get all those connections without any two crossing or the circuits cross. And he was just an amazing hard worker, always smiling, always happy to do what we're doing, and did a great job, and it was he was part of our team. And this isn't really a pinball part, but he was part of this group that did the first video system at Williams, which was the Defender Project. And that's some of my closest, fondest time with Ray.
That's right. I remember that.
Because, again, this was a very small group trying to do a lot, and we didn't know what we were doing, and we had too much to do in too short a time frame, and we were all learning together and all helping each other. And I remember specifically when Eugene and I were bringing up the very first hardware on Defender, which, of course, Ray laid out the boards for. We were doing just a feasibility mock-up to see what we could make the hardware do, and we put together a little multitasking system to try and just put things out there and make them move. I mean, it was really just the most basic stuff, and we started, you know, just making little guy who walked across the screen, and then maybe something that flew through the air. And Ray saw this, and he started drawing characters for us, little one dot at a time in different colors to put the little video characters. And what we called this program Circus, because by the time we got done, we had guys jumping through the air and spinning around and doing backflips, and it was a real integral part of that project. And it wasn't something we asked of him. He saw what we were up to, and he comes and he draws some stuff, and here, try this. And it was just, it was really great, and it brings back memories to me of a wonderful time. So I really loved working with you all the years, and it was great. And like I said, the not being able to hear really wasn't a factor in how we worked in getting your job done.
That's absolutely wonderful to hear you talk to me about that. I mean, that's just wonderful. And the next person I was hoping, maybe Mark, if he had something to add.
Very quickly. Larry's absolutely right. Working with Ray, you completely forgot about his disability. I would work with Ray as if I was working with any other engineer in the building. Ray, I can pick up from 84 on. We talked about it, the old pinball days, but really Ray laid out boards well into the 90s. I mean, to 2001, I think it was. So, Ray became the expert at the CAD system.
2001, that was the last time I worked on him, yeah.
But he became the expert at the CAD system, and he was the go-to guy. And the one thing that really hasn't been mentioned here tonight is his mentoring ability. We had some new guys, because we became quite a substantial company, we had new guys come to help with the additional boards eventually. Ray taught many of the PC board engineers on how to work with the system. And actually, there was one engineer, Greg Piotrowski. Remember Greg, Ray?
Yes, Greg, yeah.
Greg, to this day, owes his career, really, to Ray. And Greg works for me today, actually. And I wish Greg was here today. Greg and Ray worked very closely side by side for years. So I echo what Larry said. Easy to work with, was always accommodating. You walk up to Ray and you say, "Ray, I need a little change here." It was done the next day. He was a hardworking guy. I appreciate Ray for my career, and we worked hand in hand as partners. So it's a pleasure to be here with them today.
Thank you very, very much. Thank you. I wish Ken was here, but I want him to give a little speech too, but that's okay. So anyway, that's really all I have to say. I just want to thank everyone for listening to my story and listen to everyone else. So I hope you guys have a wonderful day at the Pinball Expo. Thank you very, very much.